Truth is, every single case starts in a trial court, and 99.7 of them don't make it to trial.
But as someone who practiced or litigated at both the state and the federal level, I'm just like wondering if you could speak a little bit about how state court formalities tend to differ from litigating in federal courts.
There's a lot of work that goes into mapping and marrying that information together. You have expectations around timing that are very different than the state court system. The state court, people refer to it as sort of the wild, wild west. So what we know, generative AI, OpenAI, ChatGPT, there's other models out there. They are incredible. They're absolutely incredible. Can you use that out of the box? No, 100% no, you cannot just the case citations that it's giving you are real.
So, all right, we have Nicole Clark with us today, who's the co-founder and CEO of Trellis. Prior to that, Nicole was a business litigation and labor and employment attorney. We had litigation across both state and federal courts. Thanks so much for joining us, Nicole.
So excited to be here.
I honestly just love to jump straight into it, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, you know, personally, as someone who just finds herself shifting through state and federal court data quite a bit, I'm very familiar with how overwhelming that process can be. So, you know, when you're dealing with administrative data, court data in particular, you can run into quite a lot of unexpected problems, just let's say just inconsistent coding across cases, which renders it really difficult to try to derive any sort of insights from what is otherwise is very rich, sort of useful, maybe predictive data. And so to start, just wondering if you could, you know, tell us about your journey to develop Trellis. You know, as a former litigator, how were you able to, for instance, you know, leverage the experiences that you've had to identify these specific pain points, that led you to Trellis? You know, what was Trellis's origin story?
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Sounds like you understand the pain point well, which is there is a massive data set, the entire United States state trial court system that is basically unusable in the state that it's in, that's fragmented across thousands of individual courts. And there is no uniformity and there's no structure across them, barely structure within an individual.
Exactly.
And so really at our core, that's what Trellis is. We are a state trial court research platform. We go in county by county and we aggregate data and we structure it and we normalize it. And then we make it searchable for litigators and surface then analytics on top of that data as well. And so the real origin was I practiced a lot of employment litigation. So I was in state trial court constantly and I just couldn't believe how difficult it was to find out information about my judge, about my opposing counsel's other cases. And, you know, most of the attorneys listening to this will know the, you know, send around an email, ask anyone if you know anything about your judge. And that's great. And there's value to collecting anecdotes, but you need to have that balanced with some hard data. And so I recognized that there was this massive, the largest court system in the world that really wasn't being aggregated and made searchable. And here we were sort of relying on Court of Appeals data for all of our research when the truth is every single case starts in a trial court and 99.7 of them don't make it to trial, let alone making it to trial and then getting appealed. So it was really born out of my own frustration in trying to access data and insights in the courts that I was actually appearing in. And so from that, I complained to some engineer friends that I knew that I thought there was this massive data set out there. And we started just collecting data in the courts that I was appearing in most often. Southern California litigator at that point. So sort of up and down Southern California. And it dramatically changed my practice having access to this data. I went on to win every motion that I had for about 2 years.
Wow.
And so I was hesitant to jump for sure. I really wanted to make sure. I thought this was a great idea, but like let's see it actually, you know, make my own practice better.
Right. No, that's incredible.
And then that became easier to say, well, let's take this leap here and bring this to other litigators.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I think now I'm going to ask my questions a little bit out of order, just because I think you brought up a really interesting issue about, you know, how much this is going to be used in practice, especially by practicing attorneys. Just kind of curious, like if you could talk about just almost how do you make Trellis more easily accessible in terms of just an easy interface to deal with? I'm someone who had, I used Pacer for a little while, and did I accidentally rack up a $2,000 bill because I pressed the wrong button? Yes, right? And then I had to go back to them saying, I'm so sorry, I messed up. And so I imagine for these types of data sets or these databases, there can be a learning curve. And maybe, you know, folks who do go to law school, go on to become lawyers, we're not the most teched up of folks. So for Trellis, like, how do you try to moderate that to the extent that you can? I'm just kind of out of curiosity.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I had the same story myself.
Amazing.
I came out from law school my first day as an associate. And I thought I would just, they didn't assign me anything. So I thought I would just learn for the day. Mm-hmm. And so I was on Lexis and just learning things. And then billing calls me at the end of the week and says, you know, who do we bill this $15,000 to? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I cost them money before I've even done anything.
Right.
So we try and be the opposite of that, which is at the state trial court level, on our platform, you're going to be able to search across all the docket data, parties, judges, everything, including documents, where the filed documents are available. You're searching those on the platform as well. And there's no, oops, I went out of plan. So it's not on a per document basis for state trial court documents like you might find on some of the bigger platforms. And it's all inclusive. And one of the ways that we really bring that to people is by allowing a free trial and a freemium aspect of the product, which is, you know, people, litigators come to our data because they've Googled their judge or their case or a legal issue. They come into the data and then from there, they're able to sign up for a free trial and decide for themselves, yes, this data is valuable and there's no risk. So they're able to do that, get in there and see for themselves long before they have to make a decision as to, is this the right platform for myself and my firm to purchase?
Right. No, absolutely. And I think that's kind of incredible. So I was at a firm this past summer and, you know, also going through, you know, Lexis and all of that. And you sort of have this fear of, have I done too many searches? Is this going to, you know, like, are they going to think I'm dumb because I just searched for this one thing, goodness knows how many times. Mm-hmm. And I sort of impose this internal constraint on myself of like, okay, I can't look too far because I could have that potential of racking up a bill. Whereas for Trellis, it seems you do have that option for exploration, for actually really delving deep into a particular issue, which is kind of incredible.
We also don't lock it down on the enterprise level. We don't lock it on a seat basis. Mm-hmm. I think everyone at the firm who is going to find value, whether it be support staff that helps pull docket information or documents for you, or you know, all the way down to the partner level that wants to show analytics to clients. But anyone that is going to find value in the product, we want them to be able to have a seat and have access as well.
Absolutely. And so I think on this topic of legal access, we'd love to sort of shift to the discussion of Trellis there and then just sort of the goals that you've been working toward. So, you know, as a general matter, legal access, incredibly important issue, continues to be one, you know, very rife in the public eye, especially when so much of the research points to these persistent disparities in sentencing outcomes between clients who are represented by an attorney versus those who are pro se. And, you know, kind of what we've touched on a little bit, we've seen these other analytical tools that try to democratize our ability to seek legal information, but much of that appears to be on the federal level. And, you know, you kind of reference this as well, like one can imagine how the federal courts are a more distant entity for the general public than are the state courts. They're more likely to interact with the latter than the former. So I think with all of that said, like, would you mind speaking toward Trellis's emphasis on state trial court data and the importance of really democratizing access on that level? You know, would love to hear about the law firm intelligence tool. It sounds like you guys have in the works or have already rolled out.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. If you look at the trial court system, you know, we have federal courts and we have state courts, right? And both have trial courts and court of appeals. As you mentioned, on the federal side, you're usually dealing with different types of cases, diversity over a certain amount, political questions, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because on the federal side, you have PACER, as you mentioned, which is definitely not innovative, but it is one system to be able to search across the federal court system. And that's what we really don't have at the state trial court level, absent Trellis, is that ability for a user, including a consumer or a pro se litigant, to be able to run a keyword search and find their case and find their documents and be able to do research in that way. And so we worked really, really hard to think of it as uniting each of those individual county courts where the data is hosted separately and maintained separately, and then the ability to search it and to make that as simple as possible. We really look at how can we make it so easy to use that people don't need training, because training usually means your product isn't designed well enough. That being said, it is legal research, and certainly you're going to get more and more sophisticated. But how can you make it really where the average person would expect it to behave the way that it does? So we like to think if you know how to use Google, you're going to be able to figure out how to use Trellis. And that is a starting place. And if you click on a judge, what's that going to go to? Well, it's going to go to the judge's analytics and the judge's biography. If you click on a party, then it's going to search all their litigation across the state trial courts. So really having everything hopefully sort of behave in the way that you would expect it to behave and the way you'd want to research. And as a starting place, we really try to make it accessible in that way. It's also accessible from a price perspective. So we certainly have, we have a variety of customers, right? We have a huge portion of AM100 all the way down to solo attorneys. And then we also have consumers. The consumers don't use us the way the litigators do, but they use us because they want to get a single document. And they don't know where to start to even find the document that they need. And so they're able to find it and access it better. And at the core, it's interesting because this is public data, right? We all know that at the very core of your sort of First Amendment rights are freedom of speech and also freedom of information, right? Having access to and the judicial forum really being the very basis of what our civic duties are based upon and where we need to have insights. And when the data is so fragmented, it's still public, but it's not really accessible. And it's an interesting question there of, well, is it, you know, are we really doing our duty to make that data public if it's not accessible to anyone? Mm-hmm. And so we really, you know, make an effort to make sure that this data is accessible, it's transparent, and that all the way down to individuals up to the top law firms can have access to be able to search and find information at the state trial court level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you mentioned law firm analytics.
So yes, please, yes.
So one thing to note about, first, what is law firm analytics? Well, it's being able to look at the entire state trial court system at a law firm level to see how a particular law firm is behaving, their cases, their number of cases, how long they take, what error, what practice areas, all of that. And this sounds like, oh, well, that should be relatively simple because you have data and what's the problem? Well, the problem is that every single county, you know, really maintains their data differently, calls parties a different thing. Some will list an individual attorney, some will only list the law firm. And so how do we, when a huge portion of county courts will list an individual attorney, how do we then look at the law firm level? And in order to do that, we had to do a massive AI mapping effort where what attorneys at the time that they filed this motion, what law firm were they at that time? And then, of course, you've got attorneys moving laterally and you've got firms that merge over time. So there is a ton of work that went into really making the ability to search at a law firm level across the courts. And with that, you can do so much now. You can, from a marketing and business development perspective, not only understand your firm and where you're growing and which practice areas and which regions, but also what about peer firms that you compete for business against, and understanding the landscape to be able to make better decisions there, all the way down to the strategic, I want to understand the opposing counsel that our firm goes up against most often, down to now I can look and see who was the partner on that case. I know who to ask if I do want to source anecdotes. I know who holds the knowledge at my firm on that particular information. So many different ways to gain strategic information, but being able to look at this data at the law firm level has never really been possible before. So we're really excited about it.
Great, absolutely. No, I think that actually just sounds incredible. The level of transparency you've now sort of shined onto the state court system is just like, oh, you know exactly who are the actors who are at play. You know exactly who are the folks that you should or should not be talking to, let's say, in a given instance. So no, I can't even imagine how useful this is, like, for this will be for, law firms, big and small.
Yes.
And sort of like on this topic of state courts, as someone who practiced or litigated at both the state and the federal level, just like wondering if you could speak a little bit about how state court formalities and systems tend to differ from litigating in federal courts. Because I can imagine, because Trellis deals with state court data, there's really other nuances you need to take into account that other non-state court analytical systems do not. I'm sort of wondering if you could talk a little bit about those and then how Trellis tends to sort of incorporate and build upon those.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you are absolutely right. So there's a general conception that things are a little cleaner in the federal court system versus state court system. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Down to the judge level and what your particular judge prefers, down to the case law they prefer. I mean, you can see all of this in the data. There's also then the local rules. There's sometimes the judge's rules that are applicable in their courtroom. We incorporate that every time. If you're looking at a judge, you're going to see the local rules, the rules of the state, as well as court rules of the state, as well as anything that's specific to that judge's courtroom for the way they want evidence presented, for all of that information. And so there's a lot of work that goes into mapping and mirroring that information together. And it is different. Every county has their own rules. Very often judges at the department level have their own rules. Then there's the state. And then there's, of course, all of the code, statutes, and regulations on a state-by-state basis, right? So there's a lot of fun there that is very, very different than the federal system where you have one way of doing things. You know what that is. You have expectations around timing that are very different than the state court system. The state court, often people refer to it as sort of the Wild Wild West, which is the idea that anything goes and you don't really know what's going to happen. And that's really where we come in and try to combat that by having the transparency of the data. So if a case is going to, if this judge moves cases very, very slowly, you know that going into it. You can talk to the client about that. You can make different decisions based on that. Some states, California, for instance, actually allow you to request assignment to a different judge.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Within a certain number of days.
Right.
When it starts. You get it granted as a matter of right, but if you don't bring it timely, you lose the opportunity. So that's a massive decision that you need data to be able to make an informed decision there. And so there's all those pieces there. It is a very, very different court system than the federal courts. And it's not on a state level, it's on a county level. So there's all these differences county by county, which makes it incredibly hard, but is really where we shine for folks that do litigate in state trial court venues.
Right, absolutely. I think just as a matter of strategy, I think hearing you talk about, like knowing exactly, for instance, the time duration that it's going to take for a judge to rule on something, the fact that you can tell your client, like, don't worry if this is taking longer than expected, to be able to have those conversations is pretty incredible. Yes. And then also as someone who sort of sits in fear of, not knowing, does this judge like 1-inch margins or do they like two spaces or one space, right? To be able to have that, information at my fingertips is really just pretty incredible. So to sort of shift gears a little bit, for better or for worse, generative AI is now the sort of hottest buzzword in the legal tech space now. And we've, since we've heard quite a number of cautionary tales, whether that's a generative AI hallucinating these non-existent cases or of a particular lawyer in New York actually citing these non-existent cases in his brief. And then this is all layered on top of this existing concern over algorithmic bias and how algorithms might be sort of replicating the biases we already see in our judicial system. So just out of curiosity, like has Trellis incorporated generative AI in any way in its operations? And if so, would you just mind telling us about some best practices for incorporation? Like, how do we avoid some of these really thorny legal problems that have since come to light because of generative AI?
And so, you know, the example that everyone uses about the New York attorney that filed the brief, here's an interesting thing that's happening. You know, we look across the state trial court system and you can see attorneys getting sanctioned for because their opposing counsel is pointing out that the cases that they're citing to are fake. And so what we know, generative AI, OpenAI, ChatGPT, there's other models out there. They're incredible. They're absolutely incredible. Can you use that out of the box to write? No, 100% no. Pieces. It just, and so that has to be known going in, that you cannot just trust that the case citations that it's giving you are real. Beyond that, you can't trust that where it has given you a real case, that it actually is saying what it says it's saying. So that research of being a good attorney and checking citations needs to be done anyway. But in terms of us, the legal tech that is incorporating generative AI, that is something that is so important for us to make sure that, and there's so much work going on and we're doing a ton and I'm really excited about it, to make sure that there aren't hallucinations, because that's unacceptable as legal. Though a way I'm thinking about it is sort of, if it takes an attorney longer to fact check the generative AI than write it themselves, well, that's not a win. So really taking that into consideration. And there's a variety of ways to do that. But ultimately, you need to have real data. You need to have data that you can point it to so that you are constantly able to double check, yes, this case is real, and then, yes, it's safe, what it says. Whether it be you pointing it to certain information only or retrieving it back from data that you have. We're really lucky. We have probably the largest data set of state court data available, hundreds of millions of filed motions. So in generative AI, again, the out of the box is not going to work. What you need to have is data that's going to allow you to really have trust. You need to have trust that what it's saying is accurate. And so there's a lot of things it's good at, right? It can do pretty good summarizations. It can do other things. But when you're asking it to do anything creative, and anything drafting is creative, then you really need to make sure that you are able to fact check it against real data. And that's definitely, we have so much in the works on the generative AI side, and I'm really excited about it. But it's not something where you go big and release. It's something where you make sure that this is great before you bring it to the hands of users. And it's going to change the way lawyers practice, and change the way law firms bill. I mean, all of that is in the future. The question is how fast. I think there's a question there. I think, you know, we've seen technology move slowly through legal, and now we're seeing interest change a little bit, but there's also a ton of fear and caution, and there should be, you know? So how do you utilize that? How do you use what the technology is really great at to do a better job? And then how do you make sure that you're constantly sort of watchdogging where it might be doing anything creative against data? And so that's what we're focusing on.
Right, absolutely. Just as a sort of quick aside question, I think you mentioned that, you know, generative AI, it is probably going to be here to stay, whether we not like it or not. It's going to change the way that lawyers practice. And you did mention that, you know, while we're using these tools, lawyers should be careful. Like, you're still checking these citations. You're still making sure they're correct. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, someone in law school who will sort of go out into the world when some of this legal the sort of generative AI and legal tech will really be at the fore, you know, and yourself as someone who, you know, completed her legal education in the US, I'm just really kind of curious if you have any thoughts into how legal education now should sort of train future lawyers to prepare for, you know, them being released into the wild, where at the same time that generative AI is maybe running a little bit amok.
I think that's so important that it becomes incorporated now into education and law school. It's sort of the way that everything was done with big books in the library and then, you know, moved over to, but we don't have to do that anymore. It's all online and no one's actually going to a book in the library, but they're still making us do that, right? But moving forward, they're in this new world. where they one need to have they need to do projects on it to begin with to see how it behaves, to see themselves where some of the concerns and vulnerabilities could be in terms of the information that it provides. But I think one of the most important things that needs to happen, they need training on prompt engineering. Mm-hmm. Prompts matter so much. And that is something that takes time to learn and understand how to direct it very, very specifically into what expectations are. And I think that's one of the most important things that really should be a part of law school education right now is, okay, great, we know this technology exists. In order for you to utilize it in a way that's actually going to be a net benefit to you, how do you learn what are the things that it actually can do right now that could help you early on in your career as you grow professionally? What do you want to stay away from right now until the technology changes? Mm-hmm. And what can you do to make sure that what it is capable of, you're actually harnessing the power of that.
Right.
And that is a lot to do with proper prompting. And then of course, what data you're prompting it to.
Right, absolutely. No, I think that's fantastic advice. I think as someone, I've never actually thought deeply about, you know, how I am actually constructing the prompts, for instance, that I am sort of like say throwing off into the ether or into an AI system. Now, you know, again, maybe this is something that law school should keep in mind, like teaching us if you're going to use ChatGPT for whatever thing, at least have some established guardrails about what are the best practices, how can you actually sort of ask these questions.
Absolutely.
And just as a sort of, you know, concluding point, would just love to hear a little bit about what the future holds, you know, both for you and Trellis in particular, and also for legal tech in general. I mean, like, where do you see us moving forward in the next couple of years or, you know, even decades?
Yeah. So Trellis, at its core, we really focused on the state trial court system first because no one had tackled that yet. We will be all 50 states by Q1 of next year. We'll be 44 by the
Amazing.
End of the year. So we are working incredibly hard, and I'm so proud of our team for what we're accomplishing. There's always more to add, and we will continue to be adding and growing our data set. But that certainly has been a massive goal that we will be achieving in near term. And then we'll be adding our generative AI capabilities are coming soon. And we're really excited about that because of our data set, because we have this it's public, but it's proprietary in the sense that it's so difficult to access.
Yep.
That it's difficult for people to be able to get it otherwise. And I really see us as being a tool for litigators, but not only that, really understanding our judicial system in a way that we haven't been able to before, and being able to zoom out and zoom in. So zoom out trends, high level information, all the way zoomed into my judge prefers, my font to be 14-inch, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And lawyers being able to really incorporate technology into a workflow. Now, how lawyers, what they produce will change over time, I think is interesting. I think that technology for the first time, you know, I started this company over 5 years ago, and there has no doubt been a shift in the last year or so. I guess a little bit more. COVID really kind of shifted people to recognize that there was technology out there that they should be utilizing. No one's going back, right? There are depositions now where, of course, you would go in person before are now being done,
right?
You know, by a video conference. And there's all these things that we've been able to take away and say, actually, this is a net positive. And now that there's generative AI, which is definitely such a buzzword, and I would say we've been utilizing AI in our platform since the very, very beginning, but we're talking specifically about this one aspect of AI that is recently, really exciting and shows wild promise for what it does now and what it will be capable of. But the way that lawyers practice will change. I believe that also on the law firm level, I do believe that the way that they're going to need to price will change. I think we'll be moving towards, and I'm not worried about large law firms. I know they'll figure out how to monetize this properly.
Absolutely, yes.
How to stay just fine. But I think that there's a shift in the way that we think about legal work product. and what attorney work really is. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to watch that. And I'm excited for lawyers really to be able to harness technology in a way. There's so much formality with this industry, and mm-hmm. there is so much that's been held up in, we do this because this is the way it's always been done. Mm-hmm. And to watch that kind of breaking away now, and to see there be a willingness at a minimum to understand more and to learn, that's a first step that I think is amazing. And I think mm-hmm. that we're headed towards faster adoption of technology, which mm-hmm. has always been one of the hardest things pulling the legal industry forward, is just that adoption was really, really slow, and there was this resistant to change. And mm-hmm. I think that's shifting. And I'm really excited to be a part of mm-hmm. the legal industry, i.e. over these next years, I think is going to transform dramatically. Mm-hmm. And in order to really do any of the work that's going to help transform, mm-hmm. it relies on having the legal data set to be able to build what's going to be useful for them. And so I'm really excited for what we have, our data set, and then what we can continue to build on top of it.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely incredible. It seems like, you know, you're really doing the sort of the legal version of piercing the corporate veil. You're really giving us, you know, a sense of like, okay, this is what is out there, and this is what you necessarily need, you know, to be able to thrive either as a firm, a big law firm, small firm, pro se litigant, what have you. And that's just, again, and just absolutely incredible to hear about the progress that you've made with Trellis over the past 5 years.
Thank you so much.
But just, you know, as an overall matter, like, thank you so much, Nicole, for being with us today. Really, really appreciate you taking the time to chat. You know, best of luck to you as the rest of the year goes on. Congratulations again on, you know, reaching the 50 states threshold. That's absolutely, absolutely incredible. And just, I'm very excited to see Trellis develop and then also just thrive in the coming years. Thank you so much.